This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And so we've seen an escalation of the rhetoric. There has been more friction, clearly, between President Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. But what we haven't seen is a real shift in policy.
That was Michael Hanna, director of the U.S. program at the International Crisis Group, discussing the Israeli airstrike in Gaza that killed 7 workers from the aid group World Central Kitchen. Details coming up. Also, Ousmane Sonko, until now Senegal's foremost opposition leader, has been appointed Prime Minister of Senegal. And April 2nd, yesterday, was Autism Awareness Day worldwide. We will hear a discussion with an expert. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story, Bassirou Diomaye Faye. At 44, Africa's youngest elected president took the oath of office yesterday, promising systemic change. It was the culmination of months of drama after former President Macky Sall postponed the election with just weeks to go and then, under intense domestic and international pressure, agreed to hold it after all. Ousmane Sonko, until now Senegal's foremost opposition leader, just like Faye, was in jail until 3 weeks ago, barred from running for president. When he was released, he immediately went on the campaign trail with Faye, telling his supporters that a vote for Faye was a vote for him. Now, Faye has appointed Sonko as prime minister in the new government. I talked to our reporter in Dakar, Alpha Jallo, regarding Sonko's new appointment.
Yes, it's a very significant development. If you taking into consideration the role Mr. Sonko played in the victory of President Bassirou Faye, and President Bassirou Faye is not somebody who is very popular in politics, and it was only when Mr. Sonko was blocked, when Mr. Sonko knew that he couldn't run. That's the time he asked his party supporters and his party militants to, vote for Bassirou Diomaye Faye. When he was saying that, they were both in prison, and when they were both released, Mr. Sonko didn't waste time. He just hit the campaign trail with Bassirou Diomaye Faye, and then there was an instant when they separated. So Mr. Sonko was on the southern part of the country, while Mr. Bassirou Faye was in the western part of the country. So in short, Mr. Sonko, this is an appointment which all the Senegalese people were waiting for, because they knew the role Mr. Sonko played in the election victory of the President Bassirou Diomaye Diakhaté Faye.
Sonko, is he expected to form a new government?
Yes, yesterday immediately his appointment was confirmed by President Diomaye Faye. Sonko delivered a short statement. He said that a new government is expected to be announced today. And another important appointment that Mr. Bassirou Faye yesterday was also to appoint the director of his cabinet. A very high-profile academician. He's also a very good politician. He served under the former regime of President Macky Sall for several years. He was appointed the Minister of High Education during President Macky Sall's regime.
And another interesting thing I'd like to ask you, Alpha, is, much cheering during the inauguration ceremony yesterday, especially for the military president of Guinea and the representative of Mali and Burkina Faso, 3 West African countries whose governments were overthrown in coups in recent years and are now ruled by juntas. But the rhetoric of those juntas focused on sovereignty from France, the former colonial power perceived by many West Africans as continuing to meddle in their affairs. This kind of mirrors that of Mr. Sonko and Mr. Faye.
Well, this is also, so many people are discussing Guinea's military junta. During the program, during the inauguration, when they were introducing the different heads of state from ECOWAS who attended the program, the moment they mentioned whenever they mention the name of Mali Burkina, I mean, there will be a standing ovation because both Mali and Burkina sent representative, but Guinea came because this is the first time that Mamadou Doumbouya landed in Dakar since his coup, I mean, against former President Alpha Condé. But the moment he was called, his name was called to introduce him, there was a standing ovation. People were laughing, shouting. So I don't know what relationship will this have with the new government in Senegal right now, the government of Bassirou Diomaye Faye, whether they are also, maybe there are plans for, I mean, to work with these three military juntas. I mean, all these three military juntas are against, you know, the former colonial power. So it's just we wait and see what is going to happen. But I know that their presence here yesterday was highly appreciated by, President Bassirou Diomaye Faye, especially Ousmane Sonko himself.
The new prime minister and the acceptance, were people happy on the choice?
Yes, because I've been listening to several people, especially people from from the town of Sikansoro, where Mr. Sonko is the mayor. They said that this is the only position that Mr. Sonko is entitled to get from, Diomaye Faye.
That was reporter Alpha Jallo reporting from Dakar. U.S. President Joe Biden says he is outraged and heartbroken that an Israeli airstrike in Gaza killed 7 workers from the aid group World Central Kitchen. Biden said it was not a standalone incident and that Israel has not done enough to protect aid workers trying to deliver desperately needed help to civilians. Both Senate and House Democrats have demanded that Biden comply with the Foreign Assistance Act and cut off military support if Israel continues to block U.S. humanitarian aid to Gaza. The U.S. in recent days authorized the transfer of billions of dollars worth of bombs and fighter jets to Israel, even as Washington publicly expresses concerns about an anticipated Israeli military offensive in Rafah. Michael Hanna, director of the U.S. program at the International Crisis Group, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
It's difficult for the United States to shift gears. We've seen this play out not just with Israel, but with any number of traditional allies and partners. I do think in this case, some of this is down to the president himself and his personal views. I think he has expressed very strong commitments to Israel and Israeli security. And despite some increasing criticism of Israeli behavior and the fact that humanitarian aid is not going into Gaza, and Gaza is on the brink of famine. And then in terms of the military campaign itself, which the president described several months ago as indiscriminate. And so we've seen an escalation of the rhetoric. There has been more friction, clearly, between President Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. But what we haven't seen is a real shift in policy. And I think that has led to some frustration and signs of that frustration in political terms. And I think clearly for many people, this issue is becoming a real political concern heading into the fall election in November.
Netanyahu insists that the goal of total victory against Hamas cannot be achieved without invading Rafah, where Israel says there are 4 Hamas battalions composed of thousands of fighters. The Biden administration is imploring Israel to find an alternative to smashing into Rafah. What impact would such an invasion of Rafah have on Egypt and on its relationship with Israel?
And of course, the Biden administration has expressed its own concern about the humanitarian impact of such a ground offensive in Rafah, where the majority of Palestinians have fled from other parts of Gaza, from the north and from central Gaza. There's over 1 million Palestinians in the south, abutting Egypt. And so the fears about the humanitarian impact of such a military operation are acute. And of course, if there is a push in Rafah, there really isn't anywhere to go within Gaza. And so that raises the possibility that Palestinians would be forced out. And the only direction that they can be forced out of Gaza is into North Sinai, into Egypt. And of course, this is a great fear of Egypt, the fear that they would be seen as abetting the permanent displacement of Palestinians from their homeland, a sort of recurring theme in Palestinian history. And of course, there are security considerations for Egypt as well, with having to deal with a massive influx of Palestinians and a fear of the political ramifications of such a step in terms of Egypt's own domestic stability. And so Egypt is quite concerned. This has been a moment of strain between Egypt and Israel. And obviously, this would be a major blow to the bilateral relationship if the Rafah offensive actually happens and Palestinians are displaced into Egypt.
While the Biden administration is pushing for a deal between Israel and Hamas, the U.S. in recent days authorized a transfer of billions of dollars worth of bombs, fighter jets to Israel, even as Washington publicly expresses concern about an anticipated Israeli military offensive in Rafah. What's your take on that?
I think it's more of the same theme in which we've seen a sharpening rhetoric and leaks of displeasure, but a real continuation of the underlying policy. And here the policy is one of continued military assistance and military sales to Israel. And so we've seen this divergence between rhetoric and actions. And this is the latest manifestation of that phenomenon. We've yet to see the United States really shift gears in terms of conditioning assistance on real change in Israeli behavior. And so that's where the administration has been. And it's hard to know what would force a real shift. Obviously, the president himself is wary of any kind of rupture, but there are real pressures, not the least of which is political, in terms of trying to push for a change in American policy. And so that's where we are at the moment.
That was Michael Hanna, director of the U.S. program at the International Crisis Group, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shenawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Uganda's Constitutional Court has nullified some sections of the Anti-Homosexuality Act 2023 for contravening the Constitution, but has left the most draconian parts intact, including long prison terms. The nullified sections, including criminalizing the use of premises for homosexual purposes and engaging in acts of homosexuality, which results in the other person contracting terminal illness. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Justices of the Constitutional Court upheld the constitutionality of Uganda's controversial anti-gay law. 22 private citizens and human rights activists petitioned court, contending that it infringes on the right to equality, freedom of association and expression, and the right to practice a profession, business, or lawful trade. A panel of 5 judges argued that the Anti-Homosexuality Act is a reflection of Uganda's socio-cultural realities and was passed by an overwhelming majority of democratically elected representatives. Deputy Chief Justice Richard Butela read the judgment.
We decline to nullify the Anti-Homosexuality Act 2023 in its entirety. Neither would we grant a permanent injunction against its enforcement.
The justice has ruled that the freedom of expression envisaged in the Constitution should be either verbal or written, but not physical. The court, however, struck some 4 clauses of the Act, which the judges said violated the rights to privacy, adequate living conditions, and health for LGBTQ individuals. Human rights advocate Nicholas Opio expressed worry that the judgment could further entrench the violation of the rights of the gay people.
The court today decided that it is legal and lawful to discriminate against LGBTI people. The court today decided that it is legal to exclude the LGBTI community from participating in the affairs of their country, simply on the basis of public sentiments and alleged cultural values. I think it's sad that the court could play to public sentiments and not apply the law.
One of the petitioners, Andrew Mwinda, says they plan to challenge the judgment in a higher court.
Unfortunately, the court has failed to stand beyond and above our cultural prejudices and our bigotry and has gone with the public sentiment. But what we have witnessed in court is what I would call a temporary reversal in an overall strategic battle or strategic war. So we are going to appeal to the Supreme Court.
Salome Nakawesi, one of the gay rights activists, took to her ex-handle to express dissatisfaction over the ruling and vowed to continue to fight until the law is struck off the books. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Joint troops from Chad and Cameroon have freed scores of civilians abducted by armed groups, including suspected Boko Haram fighters, either for ransom or to join jihadists on both sides of the Central African state's border. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from Yaounde that some of the freed civilians have been reunited with their families.
Cameroon's military said Tuesday it had received five people from Chadian government troops, including a 54-year-old man and four youths between 17 and 24. The five civilians who were escorted to the office of the governor of Cameroon's far north region on Wednesday are freed hostages, Cameroon government officials say. They say the men were abducted this year from villages around Kuseri and Logon-Bini towns on the border with Chad. 24-year-old Victor Muka is one of the former hostages.
La nuit, on enchaîne avec la chaîne au pion d'or.
Muka says heavily armed men chained their legs every night and tied their hands with ropes during the day. He says they were tortured regularly and were given only one meal per day during their 70 days in captivity. Muka said captors regularly forced 35 captives, including seven women, to move to different localities on both sides of the Cameroon-Chad border to avoid government troops trying to rescue them. He said hostages whose family paid a ransom were abandoned in the bush. He said armed men have representatives who collect the ransom money in border towns and villages. Last week, Chad said its troops launched attacks on border villages in Mayo-Kébi East and Mayo-Kébi West provinces, where several hundred people were held hostage by armed groups and jihadists. It said soldiers freed scores of civilians. Cameroonian nationals were returned to their home country while Chadians were reunited with their families after receiving medical care. Mitiyawa Bakari is governor of the far north region. He says he has ordered Cameroonian border troops to arrest or kill armed men and jihadists hiding in local towns and villages. He also says Cameroon is allowing Chadian troops to cross the border in hot pursuit of Boko Haram militants and armed gangs.
L'armée chadienne.
He says he is very happy that Chad and Cameroon are now reuniting to fight rebels and bring peace along their porous more than 1,100-kilometer or 680-mile land border. He says Cameroon and Chad will make sure jihadists and armed gangs that have intensified abductions, either for ransom or to forcefully recruit fighters, are neutralized if the rebels do not surrender and drop their weapons. General Ahmad Kogri is a military advisor to Chad's transitional president, Mohamed Idriss Déby. He told Chad State TV on Wednesday that Boko Haram militants have renewed attacks and abductions to acquire supplies after their firepower was drastically reduced by the multinational joint task force fighting the jihadists. He says forces fighting to restore peace have taken note that Boko Haram and its splinter jihadist groups are again attacking people, seizing goods and mobilizing to cause more havoc on civilians. He says civilians should not be scared and should report all strangers in border towns and villages to government troops. Boko Haram attacks began in Nigeria's Borno State in 2009 and spread in the following years to Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. The United Nations says the Islamist insurgents has left more than 37,000 people dead, mainly in Nigeria, and displaced more than 3 million. Malkish Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
March Madness is one of the most watched basketball tournaments in America and across the world for basketball lovers. To brief us on how the tournament has been going on for the men's and women's tournament, I have Mokbil Iyaparo, our VOA sports analyst in studio with me. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So, why is the March Madness basketball tournament interesting for our audience?
Honestly, Hayes, just to, you know, to be brief, if we really look at basketball and what it has been in the continent in the last, I would say, 4 or 5 years, we have had the Basketball Africa League, which is a it's something that the NBA basically has established on the continent to help develop the infrastructure, and not only the Basketball Africa League, but they have a initiative called BAL for Her, which is now an initiative for women players as well on the continent. So because of that, and in the past, we've also seen plenty of African players, like the likes of Joel Embiid now, who was last year's MVP, played for Kansas in NCAA. So March Madness is something that has been a part of African basketball really has been there for some time now. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see. And then on another point as well, some young players from the BAL as well have played in the tournament this year. So there's a young gentleman that I actually interviewed last year who was playing in the Basketball Africa League. His name is Ruben Chinyelu. He's from Nigeria. He's a part of the NBA Academy as well, and he now plays for the Washington Cougars. Alongside him, and last year, UConn had a player by the name of Adama Sonogo, who now is playing in the G League, who was one of the most valuable players of the tournament last year. So, Africans all around, man.
I remember Manute Ball.
Absolutely.
He was so tall. I personally met him, and
yeah,
my God.
Amazing. His son actually now plays in the NBA, who played for Oregon and was in that tournament as well, Bol Bol.
So, Mokbil, what teams have stood out to you in both the men's and women's tournament?
So, Yehez, right now, if we're looking at the men's game, we just have to basically speak about the Final Four. So we have NC State in the Final Four. They will be going up against Purdue, and then UConn will be going up against Alabama. Interestingly enough, we have two schools that have both the men's and the women's in the Final Four. So you have UConn, the men's and women's are still both in the tournament, and NC State men's and women are in the tournament. For UConn, this has been a team that has had a rich history in both the men's and the women's game. But for NC State, this is the first time, man. And they actually have a lot of really good players, and their chemistry has been phenomenal. So shout out to NC State.
So what are some of the standout players and storylines in both tournaments?
If we're just sticking with NC State, you have a young man by the name of DJ Burns, 6'9", big body, really plays the game in a manner that really is not like how it is played now. He's not really finesse, kind of old school. The former the Finals MVP last year, Jokic, actually spoke about him in a press conference interview the other day and said, he's really great, and we're really excited to see what he does in the future. And lastly, I would say storyline of the girls on the girls' side, LSU versus Iowa, Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese. Caitlin Clark was able to win, so now she will be playing up against UConn, who is has another player by the name of Paige Buchers. Paige and Caitlin Clark are number one and number two projected overall if they go into the WNBA draft. So a lot of exciting basketball news, Yehez.
Lots of exciting basketball news. Mokbil Iyaparo, our VOA sports analyst, thank you for your input.
Thank you, sir.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehez Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Kayla Williams, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.